I'm going to give you a teaching this morning that is about a psychological model that describes human nature. I know Freud came up with his model of man. What it was, is it id, ego, and superego, and then there were all the weird parts about your mother and your father and stuff like that. We're not going to go into that one. This theory came several years ago, and the theory is that we all have within us a child, a parent, and an adult, and at any given time, we're always operating in one of those modes. I know no model is perfect, but this one seems to work pretty well, and it seems to help describe how our behavior is informed and where it comes from. And, you know, the idea is we're all trying to change. We're all trying to modify our behavior and our way of thinking about ourselves and others. We're trying to become more Christ-like. And so sometimes it helps to kind of compartmentalize things, structure things in a way that helps us see ourselves and our behavior in a new light. So I'm going to describe each one of these. I'm going to describe the adult first, then the child, then the parents. You kind of understand what I'm talking about. The adult, that's the rational thinking, decision-making part of us. That's the analytical computer in our mind. When life sends us a new challenge, I use my adult to weigh out what's going on and to think about my responses. When I'm faced with a difficult situation, I need my adult to be able to step in and to think through what's going on and what needs to be done. Now, my child may want to run away and hide, but my adult has to overcome that and say, no, we're going to think through this and we're going to do what's right in the situation. The adult looks at all angles of a situation. It considers what are the different alternative solutions that might be appropriate. It analyzes the risks, the rewards, the rightness of each alternative, and decides which alternative is best, and it puts in place a plan of action to carry out the solution, whatever that is, and then it makes sure that that's done. That's the adult part of us, and it really doesn't have anything to do with how old we are, whether or not we operate in that. The important thing to understand is that it is the analytical computing part of us. I'll give you an example of how it's not age-related. When our daughter Sandy was about 2 years old, maybe she was three, we had a cookie jar on the kitchen counter and had told her, do not get cookies out of there unless we tell you you can get cookies out of there. Well, one day out of many, as she was in the habit of doing, she would climb up on the counter and she was reaching her hand in the cookie jar and had gotten hold of a cookie. And about that time, Debbie and I walk in the kitchen. Sandy, what are you doing? We told you not to get cookies out of that cookie jar. If you do, you're going to be punished. And she looks at us, and she looks at that cookie, and then she looks back at us, and she looks back at that cookie. And, I mean, you can see the wheels turning. She's trying to decide, is that cookie worth being punished over or not? And finally she decides, yeah, it is. And she reaches up and puts that cookie, the whole thing, in her mouth all at one time. And then if this had been a perpetrator before the police, she'd have held her hands out like this. Okay, put the cuffs on me. I mean, she wanted that. This was the adult in operation, thinking it through, what the consequences are, and what is she going to do?
Like a child, what else?
That's right. Speaking of the child is the part of us that wants what it wants when it wants it. It wants instant gratification. It wants to feel good. It's motivated by what feels good. It wants to be the free bird that can just kind of flit wherever it wants to, whenever it wants to. It's the party animal in us. Some of us have more of that than others do. I'll give you an example of how you know where the child is operating. When you pass by the Krispy Kreme and they've got the red hot sign lit, you know that they are making fresh, hot donuts, the best donuts in the world right now. And you also know that you have given up sweets for Lent or you're dieting or whatever it is, but the child in you says, go ahead and go in and get just one. It won't hurt. It'll be okay. And you get in the store and you discover, you know what? It's just about as cheap to buy a dozen. You might as well buy a dozen for the whole family. This is the child encouraging you. You just get a whole dozen for the family. As soon as you get that dozen hot donuts out into your car, though, the devil says, you're fasting sweets for Lent, or you're on a diet. You can't have that. And so the child says, quick, eat all of them. We must destroy the evidence. This is what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about the child, understand? The child isn't interested in what's best for us. It's not interested in what's right or the right thing to do. It's not interested in the proper method for doing things. It's just interested in what feels good and feels good right now. Now, that's not all bad. God has made us to enjoy this life and to live life in a way that we can live it to the full. And sometimes we need to be able to have a time of refreshing and a time of just pure fun. And it's okay to indulge yourself in the right time, in the right way at the time. So the child is okay. It's just you can't let the child control your life. And what we're going to do in a minute is we're going to look at Moses and how at different times Moses operated in the adult, the parent, and the child. And we'll see what happened with that. Now, let's talk about the parent. Let me see if I can describe that part of us. That's the part of us that stores our methods, our procedures, our facts. That's our internal SOP manual. You know what an SOP is? Standard operating procedures. That's right. Every morning when I go to brush my teeth, I do not use the adult. I use the procedures stored in the parent to brush my teeth. I mean, just think about it. Every morning I get up, I go in the bathroom. Let's see. I wonder which toothbrush I should use. I wonder what is the best toothbrush to use. And which toothpaste should I use today? And what method of brushing my teeth should I have? We don't do that. We just go in there and we get the toothbrush that we've always gotten and we get the toothpaste we always like and we brush the teeth maybe not the way we learned how to from our dentist or we thought was the best way. We might be brushing our teeth the way we learned from our parents when we were 4 years old. In other words, that procedure, that process of how we do that got stored in the parent part of us a long time ago. And when it comes to do it, we just automatically do it. We just pull that out and that's what we operate in. Same thing with a car on ice. We have been trained over and over and over again, especially if you've lived in the Northeast or Denver like we did where you're driving on ice a lot. You're trained that if the car begins to skid, you steer into the skid. Now, when that happens, the parent jumps in, the training jumps in, and we automatically do that without even thinking. Man, if we had to rely on the adult to figure that out, you know, we'd be going, let's see, now the car is skidding now, and I should be in about that time, we'd be off over in the ditch. You know, you can't do that. You have to allow the parent to just operate. Soldiers, I think, are a great example of who we expect to operate a lot in the parent. We want them to operate based on their training. We want them to follow orders without thinking about it. Don't get the adult involved. Just operate in the parent. I saw a sign the other day that was related to this, and I thought it was appropriate. It said, in a life or death situation, you will not rise to the occasion. Rather, you will default to your level of training. And that's because our training is stored in the parent. And when a difficult situation arises, our adult is scared out of his mind and paralyzed, right? But the parent takes over and begin to operate, assuming that there's some training there. So the parent can be a great and a wonderful thing, but there is a danger in relying on the parent too much. And racial stereotyping is probably one of the great examples of how we might rely on the parent too much. A gypsy stole money from me, conned me out of money. And that gypsy was a con artist, therefore all gypsies are con artists, therefore I don't trust gypsies and I don't like them. And this is the way people, and then put, you know, put your own kind of person in there, an own situation in there, but this is how we think, or we learned this from our parents. My dad told me that all Irishmen were drunks and they were good for nothing, don't ever hire an Irishman for anything, and so that gets stuck in our parent. That's the way we're going to act. And so in those kind of situations, our parent has picked up something that really wasn't correct and wasn't best for how we should operate, and yet that's what we've stored in there, and rather than reexamining it, we just continue to operate in the parent. I'll give you a couple examples of folks using the parent or not in good ways. I know a person who seems to be averse to the parent in a lot of their lives. They don't like it. They'll come to work one day and say, you know what, I saw this article that said people that drink Diet Coke gain weight, and I want to lose weight, and so I'm going to swear off Diet Coke and not ever drink Diet Coke again. 2 weeks later, I promise you, when they come to work, they're carrying a Diet Coke. And I say, well, what happened? I thought that you were off Diet Coke. Nah, I don't like that. I'd rather have a regular Coke. You know, I'm not interested in storing that in the parent. My adult had a chance then the child took over. I don't want the parent to. I don't know. Maybe the parent is boring to them or something. Every once in a while, we get together and go bowling, and sometimes they'll come along. They use a different form when bowling at every frame. And so one frame, they throw a straight ball. And then the next frame, they throw a hook. And then the next frame, it's a reverse hook. And sometimes they're on the right side. I mean, they just, it's like, parent, oh, no, man, I'm averse to the parent. I don't want to do that at all. But then there are guys like me, steady Eddie guys like me, who really like the idea of figuring something out once, figuring it out the right way once, and then you put it in the parent, and then you use that, and you just motor along, and that's what you do every day, same thing, boring, boring, boring to some people, but, you know, to me, this is... So, you know, you can see that any of these things can get out of balance. You have to understand how you're operating and find the right balance in your life and at the right time to do whatever it is that you're doing. So let's look at Moses and how he was handling this. Genesis 17, our Old Testament reading this morning, starting in verse 1, says, "Then all the congregation," and I'm going to tell you a secret about this passage after I read it. "Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin according to the command of the Lord, and they camped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses, and they said, 'Give us water that we may drink.' And Moses said to him, 'Why do you quarrel with me? Why don't you just trust the Lord?' But the people thirsted there for water, and they grumbled against Moses, and they said, 'Why now have you brought us up from Egypt? Whine. Oh, you're just going to kill us. I mean, it was so great back there as slaves in Egypt, and at least we weren't going to starve to death.'" And so Moses does the right thing. I mean, the adult kicks in. He cries out to God. He says, "What will I do with this people? A little more, and they're going to stone me." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Pass before the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. Behold, I'll stand before you, and there on the rock at Oreb, you will strike the rock, and water will come out of it that the people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of all the elders of Israel, and he named the place Massah and Meribah, because of the quarrel of the sons of Israel, and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" Remember that Moses had lived, been trained as a nomadic sheep herder, sheep and goat herder, for 40 years before he answered this call to the Lord. For literally millennia, the Bedouins have been herding sheep and goats in that part of the world. And one of the things that they've learned is that, you know, when it rains there, it's either no rain at all or it's a gully washer, as we used to call it in Texas, and the wadis fill up, and boy, water is really rushing. You get lots of water, deep water, for a short period of time. And that deep water then gets into caverns, gets into crevasses, and it's water that's very full of sediment. And so as the water begins to seep out and drain out of the caverns and crevasses of the rocks there, it begins to clog up the cracks that it's seeping out of because of the sediment. And so eventually the water can't seep out anymore because the sediment has completely closed off all the cracks that it would seep out of the rocks with. Well, the Bedouin that know the area, they get used to where the water gets stuck in these rocks. And so they know they can take their staff and go to this certain spot, and you scratch at that staff spot a little bit and stab at it a little bit, and pretty soon you break the sediment loose and all of a sudden the water comes out. Well, Moses understood this concept. He had to. He had been there living with these people. But the problem was he was in an area where he didn't have a clue where the water stays. I mean, he hadn't been trained in that area. This was all new to him. And so he has to trust God. The adult in Moses is kicking in now, and he's saying, "I've analyzed the situation. I'm going to have to think this through. God's smarter than I am. God tells me that he's going to take me to the right place to strike the rock. I'm going to trust him, and that's what I'm going to do." And so that's what Moses does. He operates in the adult in that situation. However, the next time they get thirsty, I think Moses operates in the parent. Look at Numbers 20. Numbers 20, starting in verse 2. Now, this was near the end of the 40-year sojourn in the wilderness. And there was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves against Moses and Aaron. The people thus contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had perished. Man, how, what a broken record that must have sounded like to Moses after 40 years. When our brothers perished before the Lord, why then have you brought the Lord's assembly into the wilderness for us and for our beasts just to die here? And why have you made us come out of Egypt to bring us up to this wretched place? It doesn't have any grain or figs or vines or pomegranates or water to drink. Then Moses and Aaron came in from the presence of the assembly to the doorway of the tent of meeting, and they fell on their faces. So far, they're doing exactly what they did before. Let's go before God and see what the Lord says to do. The glory of the Lord filled that place. They're obviously, they're humble, in the right mode for the Lord to come to them. And the Lord speaks to Moses, and he says, take your rod and take your brother Aaron, assemble the congregation, and speak to the rock before their eyes, that it may yield its water. You shall thus bring forth water for them out of the rock, and let the congregation and their beasts drink. However, let's see what Moses actually did. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, just as he had commanded him to, and Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly before the rock, and he said to them, listen now, you rebels, shall we bring forth water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted up his hand, and he struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their beasts drank. But that's not what God told him to do, is it? But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel. In other words, that's what disobedience is. It's not believing God to treat him as holy. Therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. And it goes on to talk about the waters, and we understand the story that Moses got left out of going into the promised land because he was what? Well, he was disobedient, but what happened to him? He fell back into the parent. Hey, I was trained for 40 years how to do this kind of stuff. We already showed him how to do this. I've done this. I know how to bang the rock with my staff. I can get this done. He just fell into this is what I always do mode. That was the parent operating. But of course, that's not what God wanted him to do. There are a lot of times that we would love to operate in the parent. I saw God work this way last week. Therefore, God must want to work that same way now. And that's the way we would like to do it. We would like to be able to come up with a procedure, with a process. We'd like to be able to say, oh, I'll write a prayer book, and it'll work that way every time. I'll just pray this prayer anytime I need this, and then that's done. And the Lord says, I'm not going to be in that. Because the Lord wants us to develop our relationship with him. Yes, there are times he wants us to operate in the parent, but there are times he says, no, I want you to listen to me, and whatever it is I say, that's what I want you to do. But in this case, poor Moses got caught up operating in the parent. We have seen so many ministries do that. They'll start off, boy, it's a great ministry. It's a great ministry idea. The Holy Spirit is really moving, and they start just having great success and growing and branching out and having chapters in various cities or whatever it is. And then, you know, somebody says, well, let's see, when we had this meeting here, so-and-so was responsible for bringing the pizza and they didn't. And so we got to have a rule about who brings food and how they bring it. And then a year later, well, some woman got offended because of the way this man was ministering to her. So we'll make a rule that men can't minister to women. And, you know, and eventually you have all these great rules that came from great sources. And the organization is so weighed down with procedures and rules that it just can't do anything. And the Holy Spirit can't move anymore. And they just crystallize. And sometimes they crystallize, fracture, or break. And after a while, they're gone. And nobody knows what happened. Such a great move. What happened? Well, they got crystallized. They got stuck in the parent so much that they couldn't operate and couldn't listen to what God had to say. I think we always have to be willing to reassess our assumptions of life. We all come to life with assumptions. We gather them. We make these assumptions. We stick them in the parent and off we go. But sometimes we have to reevaluate where we're coming from. We have to periodically reanalyze our parent, our SOP, our store of facts and say, is that still valid or not? We can't afford to allow ourselves to become crystallized. I remember when I was in college, I went to a church where the pastor preached a lot on the end times. and got me interested in those things. And boy, he would talk about the Antichrist is going to do this, and then the Antichrist is going to do that, and then in year 3.5, the Antichrist will do this. And I started reading books by the various end time prophets of the day, and that's why they were talking about how this Antichrist was going to do this and that. This was all so interesting. I just took all that stuff as, well, these guys know a lot more than I do, and so I'll just take whatever they're saying. I stick it in the parent, and that's what I was operating on. So a few years later, I'm pastoring my own church, and the folks are saying, hey, teach us about the end times. Oh, great, yeah, I'd love to. And I get my Bible out, and first thing I start looking for is the Antichrist, and he's not there. It talks about the beast, and it talks about there's a spirit of Antichrist that was in the world even at the time of the writing of the Bible. But it never talks about the Antichrist doing anything. It talks about the beast, the prophet. And it was all of a sudden like my whole foundation for end times was just completely shattered. It was like, well, gosh, if I can't trust that, now what can I trust? I just had to start all over again in thinking about those things. I had stuck it in my parent. I was sure it was true, but it was not true. We have to sometimes re-examine the ideas that are in our parent. We have to see if they're valid. If they're good, great. Stick them back in there and motor on. If they're not, you need to change what you're operating on and what you're based on. This is not age-dependent. Sometimes older people have a real tendency to get stuck in a rut in their thinking. Well, I've always thought that. That's my great-grandmother, bless her heart, she was certain that the world was flat. And even though we had Sputniks and satellites orbiting the Earth and we're going to put men on the moon, and she was alive at the time that this was happening, she was certain that was all staged because the Bible talks about the four corners of the Earth. See, that was her parent that had come alive, see? And we usually think of that as being old people that have trouble with that. But listen, young people can have that problem too. You know, they learn so much between 7th grade and 12th grade, at least in proportion to what they've known before, that as far as they're concerned, they have learned everything. They must have learned everything because it's so much and it's just so exciting and there's just all of this great world of knowledge to know and I must have picked up all of it by now. And so it becomes very easy for them to think they know it all. Now, they're certain that their parent inside them, in their teenage years, they've developed a parent as well. They're certain that all that stuff is correct. They're certain that they have pulled in so much stuff. You know, they got so much stuff to think about. Man, you take it and you throw it in the parent right away. You don't examine it too much and off you go and you roar on and you never look back. And they get to the place where they think, well, I just know it all. And you know what's funny about it is they forget that the adults around them went through exactly that same process. Got to this place in 12th grade where they had learned so much so quickly, they thought they knew it all, and yet they continued on after that learning too. At Texas A&M, I'm a fighting Texas Aggies, y'all know, they had a saying. They said, the freshmen arrive, and they don't know, but they don't know, but they don't know. The sophomores, however, they still don't know, but they finally realized they don't know. Now the juniors, they know, but they don't know it yet. But we seniors, we know and we know it. And you know, as far as I'm concerned, I think everybody ought to go to college, and it really doesn't make any difference what they study. The reason I think everybody ought to go to college is so you can get a kind of a glimpse of just how much knowledge there is out there, number one, and number two, how little of it you could ever possibly know. It's just such a humbling experience to realize that we all have to always be in a place of constant learning, constant reevaluating, constant rethinking, you know, maybe what I've been doing all along just isn't the right way to do things. I need to be able to rethink about that. At this point in our lives, we can't just throw everything out, but we have to be able to reconsider those things. Okay, so now I promised you that I said Moses acted in the child as well. Let's look at that. Exodus 2 and 11. This is before these situations. Exodus 2, and we're going to start in 11. You know, Moses was born, they put him in the bulrushes, yada, 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 and then eventually he gets to where, now it came about in those days when Moses had grown up, that he went out to his brethren, and he looked at their hard works, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. Now remember, although Moses was raised in the house of Pharaoh's daughter, Moses was raised by his mother and his sister. She was the one that came in as the nursemaid. he knew he was a Hebrew. He was being raised to be a Pharaoh, but he was a Hebrew and he knew it. And he'd been told all these things about how hard it was and how God's going to send a deliverer. And Moses, I'll bet you that deliverer is going to be you because you're here. You are in Pharaoh's house. And so God's going to raise you up. And, you know, he had all of this stuff in his young mind. And what did he do with it? So he looked this way and that. And when he saw that he thought, anyway, that there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian, killed him, and hid his body in the sand. And he went out the next day, and behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the offender, "Why are you striking your companion?" But he said, "Who made you prince or judge over us? Are you going to kill us like you did that Egyptian?" So Moses was afraid and said, "Surely the matter is made known." And sure enough, Pharaoh hears about it, and then he goes out and tries to kill Moses, but Moses takes off. So what happened? Moses falls into acting from his child. Not the part of his child that just wants something that feels good, but the part of his child that says, I want what I want, and I want it now. I know what my destiny is, and I'll just make it happen. I'll make it happen on my own because I want to make it happen now. It's just like a child, right? This is what I want to happen. If I'm mad, I'm going to get angry, and I'm just going to carry out whatever is in my mind for that anger. Now, it's not that acting in the child's all bad. It's okay to have some fun, to enjoy life along the way. I mean, it's important that we let our child enjoy a few things along the way. Matter of fact, I suggest to you, when you eat an ice cream cone, let your child eat that ice cream cone. Now, the adult in you will know it's not okay to get it all over your mouth and on your clothes like a child would, you know. And your adult may tell you you can only have one or you can only have one a week. But you know, when you get that one ice cream cone, let the kid enjoy it. That's the time to be the child, to allow ourselves to enjoy some of this life that God has given us. But never do what Moses did. He let his child take control of his life. And matter of fact, because of that, it took 40 years before Moses learned not to let his child be in control, because it was that long before God could use him then to actually deliver the children of Israel. So what shall we say? In conclusion, as it were, you're almost always operating in one of these three, the child, the parent, or the adult. And we need all three in our lives, but they all three need to be in balance in our lives. So we have to be on guard. We can't allow the child to control our lives, and yet we have to allow times when we enjoy life and we let the child have what it wants when it wants it. We can't become too dependent on the parent. You know, we can't just quit assessing things and, well, I figured that out 40 years ago. Now I don't need to think about it again. We have to continue to reassess things. But by the same token, we can't ignore that wealth of wisdom that's stored in the parent. We need to allow ourselves to operate in that. And lastly, but not leastly, God has given us a great gift in our intellect and in our thinking ability. And I think we have to learn how to use that and use it to God's goodness. But as my wife would tell me, we also have to be careful not to overthink things and just be able to let go and let God at times.